Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Paul Symington. How are you, Paul?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Excellent. You're from, is it Symington Estates? No, it's not Symington.
Symington Family Estates.
Symington, yeah. Family Estates. You're a big port producer down in Portugal.
We make a bit of port, yeah.
A little bit, the odd drop or two. Yeah. And I suppose I'm saying you're from Portugal is a bit of an anathema these days, because port these days must come from Portugal.
That's right. In the old days, port types were made in Australia and California, South Africa. But over recent years, it's become really established that port is just from the Douro Valley in northern Portugal.
Yeah, exactly. And so do you see these other port types around?
You do, and some of them are really good. I mean, I have huge respect for the guys making fortified wines in Australia and South Africa and California, and especially their old tawnies can be fabulous.
Yeah.
But, they've just agreed over time to use a different name to describe their wines.
Yeah.
And, you know, as their own regions have become more and more important on the world scene, I think it's just become a sort of accepted thing that these, words would stick onto their original geographic areas. But, you know, I like these wines, and they make some great wines.
Tell me, what we're going to do is we'll do a wee bit of a profile on Symington and yourself. Are you your last year's Decanter Man of the Year, if I recall?
Yeah, that was embarrassing.
Why is that?
I don't like, you know, it's great when something comes to your region, but it's not really down to me. I've done my stuff, but I work with a brother and three cousins, and we're very much a collective, and we have a lot of people working with us. So it was great to get the award, but I was really proud of it. But it was really a family award, and not just me. So they gave it to me because they give it to one person. But it was really for everybody, including our guys who work in the vineyards with us, and we have a lot of people working with us who've been working for generations. So
yep.
It is for all of us.
Oh, lovely! Do you want to just give us a bit of a history and profile of Symington? You know, you are mainly. What, do you make any red wines from the Douro?
Yeah, we do. Yeah, our family history is a bit curious, really. Our family is a real mixture. My great-grandfather was just a kid when he came down to Portugal from Scotland. He was 18 years old, and it was in 1882. And he arrived in Oporto just as a, you know, real, real young guy. And he got straight into port. And he married a woman in 1891 who was half Portuguese and half English. And her family had been in port since the 17th century, 1652 to be exact. So, I mean, he basically married into port. And I'm fourth generation after him. My daughter who's here today is the fifth generation. And so we're a funny mixture of Portuguese, Scottish and English. And we put our roots down in the Douro, and I don't think anything is going to take those roots away. You know, it's just become our home.
Yeah, you were saying before we started that your father, when he came over for your award, was a bit worried he was going to pop his clogs here and get stuck in England.
He said, I looked at him, I said, Dad, are you joking or are you serious? And he said, don't leave me there if I die. I said, Dad, you're not going to die. It'll ruin the party. But he had this thing about, he was born in Portugal, like me, and he was at school in England when the war broke out, and then he joined the army, the British Army, and was very proud of that. But his home was Portugal, and he didn't want to be left here.
No. Well, fair enough. I'm a Kiwi. I think I'm going to be buried here myself, but I wouldn't mind being buried in New Zealand as well. But these things happen sometimes. You say you married into the port not yourself, but your great-great-grandfather. Were they port producers in their own right at that stage?
No, her father worked in a company called Offaly, which is still going today. It's owned by another company, but her uncle worked in Smith Woodhouse, and there were other ancestors who were Van Zellers, who owned Naval. There was another ancestor, was it Kopke, which is another port company still going. So, I mean, there were generations of port people. And so he just married into port. It was all around him, and he just made it his own, really.
And did he take over their business effectively?
He became partner in Worsport in 1905, and then he became a partner in Dowsport in 1912, and then my father's generation bought Grahamsport in 1970, And my generation, me and my brother and cousins, bought Cobans in 2006. So we've just, you know, Wars and Dows have been with us for over a century, the others more recently. But we're 100% family owned, and only us. And it keeps us really busy, and we love what we do.
Yeah.
I mean, I know New Zealand's got some fabulous geography, and it's really beautiful. I've never been there. But the Dauru, I think, is one of the most beautiful wine-growing areas in the world. And it's not difficult to fall in love with it. And if you live there and you farm the grapes there, it just gets under your skin. And you don't want to swap that with anything. So that got under AJ's, we call him AJ, that got under AJ's skin. It got under my grandfather's skin. It got under my father and us. And so it is our life, and we love it. We absolutely love the Dauru. And you need to go there, because I think of all the great wine regions in the world, I honestly believe there's none as wild and beautiful as the Dauru.
Okay. Well, mate, I haven't actually been to the Dauru yet. I've been to a few regions, but I've never even been to Portugal. So,
it's 2 hours flying time away from where we're sitting right now. So you have no excuse.
Oh, no, I know that. I know that. Let's talk about the brands that Symington owns. You've kept them almost separate, you know,
in terms of
the way you've approached them. Do you want to just go through the brands again and just maybe a bit why you've done that rather than sort of encapsulating them into them?
Well, the reason why there isn't a Symington port is because Wars was already 200 years old when my great-grandfather became a partner there. So if you have Wars known for its port for 200 years, you're not going to suddenly stick your own name on it. So we have this rather curious way where our family name is on the label, but quite small, and we've maintained Wars and the others. And it's really the vineyard speaking there. And Wars was the original company. It's a very floral wine. It's a very elegant wine. It's based on a quinta called Kevadinga in the Pingang Valley, which is quite high. So we picked late. It's a fresher wine. It's more elegant and feminine. It could not be more different from Dao's, which is just down the valley at Pingang, much hotter, south facing, very intense, concentrated wines, very tannic. And the wines could not be more different. So how could we not make them like that? It's just the vineyards making it. Graham's is up further towards the Spanish frontier, also on the riverside, facing south, much more generous, more rich. Whereas Dow's is austere and tight and focused, Graham's is more voluptuous and richer. So we could not have more different styles from Graham, Dow, and War. Cobans has been a fascinating project because Graham, Dow, and War have been part of my life since I was born. Cobans we bought from a big multinational. It'd been owned by Allied Domecq. It was briefly owned by Pernod Ricard. It was then owned by Beam. And it had become I hate to say this, but it became almost like an industrial wine. It was a big volume seller. But I think the heart and soul had been lost somewhere down the road. And we called buying Cobans going back to its roots. I mean, it sounds corny, but that's exactly what we said. We've got to take this house, this company, this brand, back to give it its authenticity. And we did an incredible tasting a year and a half ago where we opened every single bottle of Cobans Vintage Port in existence back to 1896.
Oh, okay.
And we asked people from all over the world to come and taste. And we said, we've got to find out what was the DNA of this, of Cobans, because we think it got lost. And we asked all these people to come. And a lot of people came. We weren't trying to sell them anything. We said, come and taste with us and tell us what made this great back in the 20s and 30s. And where did it go wrong? It was one of the most fascinating tastings I've ever done. So we're having a real lot of fun with Cobans. Just saying, look, forget the industrial stuff. Forget making wine to a formula. Let's take Cobans back to what it really was in the old days. And we're beginning to... I bought the Special Reserve is the big selling wine. It's the biggest selling port here in the UK. With my cousin Charles, who's the winemaker, we made about 3 or 4 different blends for the Special Reserve.
Yep.
I bought it over here and tasted it with several wine merchants and said, what do you guys think? What do you think? Because I didn't want to go too wrong. So I would say we're halfway down that road. We haven't cracked it yet, but I think it's really fun. You know, it's bringing a brand back to life.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But do you think that the brand was lost, or you think it was lost, don't you?
I do think it was lost. I think it'd been made to formula, big multinational. They don't want to take risks. So, you know, the variations of the wines was sort of, was eliminated, but you know, it's a wine. It does have variations. So,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we're quite enjoying this, you know. So we love what we do, and the identity of the four. Sorry, I'm talking too much about it, but you know, we feel pretty passionately about these things.
Yeah, sure. Symington must be. You can correct me. You will know the numbers better than me. You guys must be the biggest port producer now, are you?
We're probably number two in volume. We're probably number one in value. The official figures aren't available. We represent about 22% of all port produced.
Yeah, yeah.
But we have a much higher percentage of the premium ports. We're about a third of all premium ports, which is everything above Ruby Tawny White.
Okay, and Taylor's, are they the number one, are they?
No. There's another company called Cruise, which is a big brand in France. They're number one in volume.
Oh, really? I don't know them.
No, they're not even in the UK. But France is a big volume port market, and Cruise is the number one port there.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. And they're not in the UK?
Not in the UK.
Oh, that'd be why I haven't heard of them. Then where does Taylor's fit, then?
Taylor's is a very good company, which is also aimed at the top end. They're smaller than we are. But they're a worthy competitor of ours.
Yeah, okay. Let's get back to yourself. Do you want to just give us a quick overview of your progress through the company? Because it's a family company, so they must have, like, you've got your daughter here. You must have been groomed from an early age. I've just interviewed Jean-Frédéric Hugel, who's being groomed at the moment, so to speak. So I'd be interested to see what your...
Yeah, well, I was born in Oporto in 1953, and in those days, my dad used to go into the cellars on Saturday. Everybody worked with the week, and the week went through till Saturday lunchtime. So as a kid, to get out of stop destroying the house with my brothers, we would be taken into the cellars while Dad worked, and we'd run around and play hide and seek there. So yeah. I grew up with this, and then up in the vineyards, it was always just races through the vineyards in the winter, and I grew up with all of this, so I knew I was always destined for it. I was at school in Oporto till I was 12, then I came to school in the UK from the age of 13 to 18. Then I studied in France for a while, studied in the UK, went back in 79. It was always on the cards I'd go back. And I started working with my family in 1979, and I've been there 35 years now.
And what roles have you done?
I started in the selling side. I started traveling and doing tastings in Holland, in Belgium, a bit in the USA, in the UK. And then I've got involved in the administration side, my cousin Peter was the winemaker, and then he passed that on to his son Charles. But we all spent time with him in the tasting room, and so I'm now chairman of the business, only because I was the oldest. And I try and keep but we're very much a partnership, and so that's been my career really. I spent my weekends at my own, I have my own 15 hectare vineyard. My wife runs a shop in the local village where we're trying to keep, you know, these old mountain villages are losing a lot of their population, and we're trying to keep them going a bit. And that's my life, really, between Oporto, where we age the wines, and where the main part of the bottling, tasting takes place, and then an hour and a half inland where we have our vineyards. So we spend a lot of time going between the two places.
Yeah, yeah, okay, that makes sense. And do you think where you're at in your career... You know, you've got your daughter here now. What was her name again, sir?
Charlotte.
Charlotte. Is she looking to progress through the same sort of thing as you?
I hope so. I've got three other children, and I hope at least one of them will come in as well. And my brother and my cousins also have kids. So there's no shortage of people who will come in the next generation. And I'm really pleased about that. You know, I think there's a huge affinity between families and wine. I think this whole idea of thinking long-term, planting a vineyard, which is only going to be great 9, 10 years down the road. And I love the idea. I'm 60 now. I love the idea of the next lot coming in. You know, my daughter's here. She's here on the stand with us today. I love the idea that in a few years' time, I can just back out and they'll carry on. And they have the same burning desire to do this.
Do anybody have a knack for winemaking or viticulture, or is that more yeah. the business side of things?
Yeah, I mean, the different members of the family do different aspects. I've never done the wine enology myself, and I rather regret not having done that. And I think that certainly some of the next generation will be doing a lot more of them. Charles, the winemaker, he did enology in Spain, Logroño, worked for Miguel Torres in Chile, has worked at various places of the world. And other of the next generation will certainly be doing that as well. But I didn't. I'm rather sorry that I was always more on the business side of it. But, you know, somebody's got to get out there and sell the wines.
No, exactly. What about Charlotte? Do you think she'll do winemaking or viticulture?
I think she might eventually. Yeah, I think she might. She's here. She's doing the tastings. She's on the WSET courses. And who knows where that might lead. You know, there's a lot of opportunities there.
Perfect. All right. Just out of curiosity, what's your favorite port style?
That's a difficult question. I think if I had to choose just one, it would have to be vintage port. I mean, I love the old Tawnies. They're fantastic wine, especially when it's hot and in the summer. But I mean, there's nothing, the king of all, the Everest of all our wines is an incredible vintage port, whether it's a 63 or 45. And we see those wines made by our fathers and grandfathers as a model for what we try and achieve. You know, every time we taste and wonder whether to declare, because when we make a great vintage, we make a declaration, and that only happens 2-3 times every 10 years. And that's a career-defining decision.
Yep.
I've been in the company 35 years, and we've only declared 11 vintages in that time. And when you retire, people rather say, okay, what did he make? What was he involved in it? And if we could make a wine as great as a 45 or a 63, then you feel you've actually really made something. Of course, the weather plays a huge role in that, but then the work you do in the vineyards, the work you do in the wineries, the tasting is all part of that. So I just hope that when I've been on my watch, that me and my brother and cousins have managed to make wines which one day will be rated up there with those. So my favorite would have to be a great vintage port.
And how old? Because the wines are different when they're young to when they're very old.
Yeah, that is a big question, is what is the great age for drinking port? In all my experience, I think that the judgment time is when they're about 20. If you can think when it's 3, 2, 3, 4, 5 years, you think, my God, look at the color, look at the depth, look at the concentration. Taste the tannins, and all of those things look magnificent. And then 10 years down the road, you say, where did they go? Where the hell did they go? You know, we bottled it 2 years old, 18 months, 2 years old. You think you've got a fabulous wine, and then there's some that magic chemistry that happens when you stick the cork in there, lay it down in the cellar, and nothing happens. It's isolated from the air. The temperature doesn't change. It's down in the cellar. And then 10, 15 years on, the wines can sometimes be faded. And then other times, some real alchemy happens there, and they become magnificent. And I think around the 20-year-old age, you can really say, have we made one of the real greats? And then, of course, the real greats will go on almost forever. I've tasted an 1896 Dao, which my grandfather drank in the trenches in France in 1916. And the wine was just magical, pale, delicate, very fragile, over 100 years old, original cork, and just a piece of magic. And yet you can open a 63 sometimes, and the corks let you down. So, you know, like all old wines, they can be a bit of a lottery. Yeah. But I just hope that we've managed to make, in my time, wines that will be one day up there with those great legends.
What do you think the great wines in your time are?
70, but I wasn't in the business then, but the 70, to my way of thinking, made by my father and uncles, is up there with the 45 and 63s, and we'll be increasingly seeing that. That's probably one of the greatest Cinderella's ports of all time, and if you can find some 70s somewhere, buy it. I think the Grahams is particularly good, but all the 70s are fabulous. During my time, I think probably the greatest is the 94. I think they're fabulous. The 2000s, the one from 2000 is a fantastic wine, but obviously coming up to its big judgment day soon.
Yeah, yeah.
The 07, and they recently declared 11. I think that would be the ones in my career. 94, the 94, the 2000, the 2007, 2011.
Okay, excellent. All right then, Paul, I think we'll wrap it up there. Thank you very much.